Preparedness and Ocean Policy. And we are continuing our public hearing on House Bill 3609. And I will call Paul Engelmeyer, who came from a long ways away to be here today.
A long ways away.
Yes.
My world.
Your world, yes. And thank you for making the trek over the hill, and hope it wasn't too unpleasant. So.
Good morning. Actually, it was a beautiful ride.
Cool.
Compared to last week, would have been a much more challenging ride.
Yes. Well, we're glad that this is happening this week, too. So if you would just read your name into the record for us, please.
So, for the record, my name is Paul Engelmeyer. I'm work with Audubon, and I am the statewide representative on the Ocean Policy Advisory Council. Lane County. So,
I'd
like to just give you a very short historical perspective on why I would, in fact, be in front of this committee. So, in the early 80s to mid-80s, I was a member of the Pacific Fishery Management Council's Habitat Committee and Salmon Advisory Subpanel. And so that gave me a venue to do a ton of homework related to our marine issues and dealing with the Habitat Committee. And for the most part, my background has been dealing with watershed issues, watershed restoration, land acquisition, working with federal, state partners on watershed recovery strategies. But my expertise dealing with the Pacific Fishery Management Council engaged me in some of these ocean conservation issues more. And as a result of being in that Pacific Fishery Management Council arena, I was aware of the executive order that came down from President Clinton related to marine protected areas. I, of course, went to the Ocean Policy Advisory Council at that time, alerted them to this issue, and out of that evolved the 2002 recommendations to develop a network of marine reserves. And so we, of course, as you all are aware, went into a doldrums for a number of years, and now we're back engaged in the issue full time. And so from my perspective, I look at House Bill 3609, and I realize that we're now through. I mean, this is, of course, a very contentious issue. There's no question about it. And so when I think back to, I believe it was last year, many of you may have attended the screening of Common Ground in Salem here, where we had about 50-plus state legislators and, what was it, about 300 to 400 people. Level of discussion was very good, high degree of engagement with the public, significant public participation with the question of, why aren't we doing this? This makes sense. But it was still very controversial, as we know. And the resolutions from the ports and the resolutions from the coastal communities going to the governor shows the level of controversy. So I, from my perspective in the OPAC arena, I realize that the policy guidance document that we have literally struggled with, and now it is, we've now gotten to the point where we're ready for public review and input. And the Sea Grant has engaged the OPAC and arena in terms of their outreach effort. And they're going to be up and down. They have a timeline, a meeting schedule in all of our coastal communities. They've got, they're going to be using this policy guidance document, which has definitions of marine reserves, objectives, all referenced. It's a really, from my perspective, it was a struggle, but we've got a really good document ready for public review. And so within that, there's also a, in terms of the package that's going to be out in I think it's the 18th in Coos Bay is the initial meeting. We'll be using the background paper from Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. If you haven't seen it or if Patty Burke hasn't given a presentation to you, I would urge that to happen. And Selena Happel from the Scientific Technical Advisory Committee in OSU, she'll be giving a presentation on the science of marine reserves. And so it'll be a listening, learning effort. That is in process. And so for me, this is, to be honest, a bit of a, I hate to call it a distraction, even though I really support it. I mean, we definitely need the legislation engaged in this. But right now, we've got something that we've kind of went through, from my perspective, through that controversial stage with a lot of misinformation out there. And now we've got something that we can actually point to and engage the public in our coastal communities. And at some point, I'm not sure if actually the committee has actually gotten a presentation from OPAC on the policy guidance document. And so that would be another thing maybe worth your while to engage in some of the nuances in that document from our perspective, some of the key points that are in there. So from my side, it looks as if I would like us to try and attempt to move forward with the OPAC arena, and I would just put this in a holding pattern and get ready for some of the discussions related to budget and some of this next steps.
Thank you. Rep. Kelly.
Thanks. Thanks for coming over, Paul.
Thank you.
I really am confused. I'm hoping that you can help me with understanding the amount of angst that we're hearing represented around this bill. Your testimony was very pleasant today in referring to it as a bit of distraction. We've heard others testify before us that the bill stops the community process cold, that it undercuts the collaborative effort. Words like that are really pretty confrontational. And I simply don't see anything in the bill that's any kind of an effort to stop the community process or to stop this conversation. It was intended as an attempt to build some legislative role into the process as it moves along, because ultimately the legislature has to fund it in order for these to be workable. So could you help me understand why there's so much anxiety over this bill?
Well, I guess my take on it is, again, we're at a point in OPAC where I think the controversy is we're ready to go out and actually sit down, and we are sitting down mm-hmm. with many folks in these communities. Mm-hmm. And so to all of a sudden have definitions and things change from where we were, which is the policy guidance document is now ready for public review, which is different than House Bill 3609. There are nuances in there, and the challenges that... as you all know, OPAC has representation from commercial, charter boat, sport, conservation community. And literally, it was a struggle to get to this document, to this point right now, where it is, we've all agreed that this can go out now to the public and see what folks think about the definition that we struggled with and the goals and objectives about how do we avoid, to the extent practical. Those are languages that we all agreed to, ready, let's move this out to the public. So that's where we are right now, and that's where I think the timing is right for us to take this out. The schedules are all set, and 3609 basically would shake that rug again, and it's like, we don't need that right now. We do need you right now on a number of other things, especially related to some budget near-term efforts. That's key, and I think that a message to the Marine Cabinet going, we need to make sure this happens in a way that all of your needs are available. Your FTEs are available to help facilitate this process. And maybe that memo has gone out. It has or hasn't. Okay, but that's, for my take, that would be something, that would be an incredibly valuable role that this committee could send a message to the Marine Cabinet. What are your needs in order to fulfill this direction?
Follow it.
Go follow it.
I'm listening carefully, and I'm hearing what you're saying. I know that there is nothing in the bill that suggests that the process that's taking place come to a screeching halt or not go forward. It talks about the final recommendation needs to be incorporated in the Oregon Ocean Resource Management Plan, which is part of the process that would have to take place. And it talks about providing procedures for monitoring and evaluating, you know, which are things that are kind of preparatory to the issue that you were alluding to in terms of adequate funding to do those. Doing this experimentation without getting a baseline study and then seeing if it works is kind of not particularly useful. So all we're talking about is that we need to be able to do the scientific analysis as we go on. But I think, I guess I just need to say that it seems to me that there's really kind of a misunderstanding out there that this bill is designed to somehow put the brakes on a process that we all support in terms of the conversations that are going on and trying to figure out a way to design some number of potential sites that we can evaluate and not have dramatic socioeconomic impact at the same time. So, I mean, you're welcome to respond to that. I guess it wasn't really a question. It was just I'm puzzled.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I guess in terms of my efforts here, in terms of dealing with habitat protection strategies that deal with a suite of species, you know, that's really what our focus is here. And developing an engagement with the fleet and all sectors of the fleet, not just, you know, salmon trawlers, right. You know, the crabbers, the whole routine, the pot folks, the charter boat. That process is engaging right now. And having somewhat of a distraction, from my perspective, with legislation right now as we're engaged with this, is just a mistake, you know. And so I see this idea of how do we engage the different fishing sectors, and that process is moving. We're talking February 18th is the first meeting, and so I just really that's where my focus is. Bringing the community engaged with Sea Grant to have that caliber of discussion about the policy guidance document, about the nomination process. The nomination process is a number of months in the future. Having a discussion with our communities about, look at the document. Is it sufficient to actually ask the questions that we need in the future? So those are things that we are going to be having a dialogue with the different fishing sectors, with the conservation community.
And we are well aware of that. We're very closely attuned to that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. You know, my history is not as long as yours, and I thank you for your committed effort to these issues. But I got to tell you, what I learned of it is I think the process wasn't moving forward in the past until this committee got involved in it. I think there were one or two staffers in the executive branch that were moving in a wildly irresponsible direction, to be quite frank with you, and not necessarily representing the will of the governor. I think this committee has got this moving forward. Our job here is not to just sprinkle holy water on any committee or commission's findings or results. Our job is to examine it very carefully. And that's exactly what we're doing. And maybe in your definition it is a distraction, but that's what we're hired to do. And I've seen it time and again in this building. Somebody doesn't like exactly what's going on, and they do everything they can to obstruct and delay. And I'm not accusing you of that, but one could easily interpret a lot of the testimony that's been before us of just that. Now, I have to just not agree with you that we're a distraction. We're doing our jobs, and these good people who represent the coast, I'm just grateful it's here before them rather than people like me who does not. I represent a very urban area, but I don't see anything in here, and quite frank with you, slowing this up. I think it's helping it. I think it's bringing something to the table, and eventually we're going to have to fund it with some money. And to just say, in my opinion, that we should just sprinkle holy water and give our blessings to something going on out there and then wait for folks to just come and ask for money to do it is just wrong. So I do support this bill, but I do thank you for your effort. And I always leave the door wide open to the possibility that I'm wrong. probably aren't going to hear that very much in this building, but I do leave that door wide open. But thank you for coming so long, such a long way.
And Paul, just, you know, maybe you haven't seen some of the amendments that we've been that have been coming before us to help guide us in terms of tightening up language if it's necessary for the whatever it is that we're trying to do here. And just a little history on this, too, is when our drafting deadlines were approaching, it was before October or before the November meeting of OPAC, we still didn't have a South Coast representative, which, you know, from sitting there, was going to stop the process of the outreach program that had been proposed.
Right.
And its subsequent funding, et cetera. So this is part of that, was to make sure that since we didn't know what was going to happen with that, that this bill would have ensured that the outreach program would have gone forward, for one thing. It does nothing different, and we made that very carefully. We take all our existing definitions. We're taking from existing statute, existing OPAC policy statements, and the outreach program to move it forward. And we're going to be asking for a removal of the subsequent referral to Ways and Means, because without something to fund, we really honestly can't go before Ways and Means and ask them for money unless we know, A, how many of these things, how much they're going to cost, and when they might likely need the funding. So in my purview, I can't see where we'd need it for this 08 session. And the stack, the piece there that reimbursed, that says the stack shall be reimbursed, we're going to remove that anyway because of the, well, when we heard the revenue forecast, I thought it would, we'll find that other somewhere else. And I've also subsequently had four offers to fund stack reimbursement costs, depending on what they are, but, you know, it's not time, but it's expenses for travel, et cetera, for those who do not get that in the terms of their positions. Most of the stack members are from Oregon State University, and I don't know what their policy is on that, but that's something that we're looking at, but we've definitely are taking that out of it. So in my opinion, my humble opinion, we won't be having a fiscal attached to this because the nomination process won't be, and as we heard from the governor's office, they will be coming before the 09 legislature to ask for funding, and so that process is moved forward past this session's purview, and we know that's coming, but hopefully by then we'll know what we're talking about, what we're asking money for. And right now it's just, in my opinion, the agencies are probably guessing, because we don't know what exactly, until we get the scientific statements, what we're going to be guessing about. And so that's kind of been taken out of it in terms of that. And the definitions are taken straight out of the existing policy statements and statute. So we're not trying to... Frankly, I was surprised at the people coming forward because... But then with the testimony against this bill, because when we asked them, as Representative Cowan asked you, what exactly about it is the problem... we don't get a sense of some real danger coming, or that we're trying to stop this or whatever. I was really surprised of the Portland Audubon statement of that it was clearly trying to obstruct the process, because we're trying to keep the process going. We're also trying to meet the needs of the requests from our constituents who've said, please have the legislature have a role in this, because eventually we will. If a funding request comes before us, and I would hope that you would all agree, it's better to have not be taken by such surprise in 09 when the governor comes forth with a funding request for this Marine
Corps. No question
reserves.
About that.
Yeah, this way we will have had this fully vetted in the committee process and on the floor, both House and Senate, and the whole legislature will know what this is all about. And so when it comes forward in 09, they'll say, oh, yeah, we remember that. So that's where we were coming from on that. So.
Has the committee seen any of the background ODFW presentation on Marine Reserves?
We haven't, not the latest one that's been coming forth, and I know that I just heard last week that a lot of this process has been turned back to ODFW. No, we have not heard, and we expect to. when Patty's ready to do that.
So. Right, I would urge
she's
that.
She's a little busy, right?
She's a little busy. She just got a little bomb dropped on her.
You're a priority, and I think that should happen with, of course, Dr. Selena Appel discussing the science of marine reserves and the policy guidance document. I think that would be a critical piece for the committee.
We definitely, and I've actually put in a call to Patty, you know, kind of a consolation, you know, sorry this all happened so quickly, and I'm hoping to hear from her soon.
Okay.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, very agreed. Nothing ever happens without money, okay? We don't have any money in this. We will be, assuming I'm on this committee next year, assuming re-election, I'm confident that the department will come and give us a presentation on everything you just talked about and probably more. So, and I agree with you, we should have all the evidence before us, but tomorrow's a deadline, and I think we're moving forward, but we'll see.
Yeah. Rep. Krieger, you had a comment?
Yeah. Well, I want to question you on an issue. It was my understanding that is a draft policy document that has not been totally finished and approved. And then I would say, it was done at a time when there was no South Coast representation on OPAC to question any part of that. Is that true?
Well, if you look at the language that David Allen, for the introduction or the preamble or whatever phrase that they discussed, we've endorsed it for public review and input. And when I look at the OPAC makeup, I mean, you look at the number of individuals on OPAC. South Coast is well represented in the OPAC arena with a sport fisherman from, where's Jim Peck from? Gold Beach. Brad Pettinger, commercial fisherman. You know, you go through, there's real representation is very solid there. Now, of course, it is definitely shored up with that appointment. That was another distraction for. I'm glad we're by that issue. And that, again, lends itself to let's move our OPAC process forward. And if it doesn't work, I'm, of course, ready for another venue. But I believe in a bottom-up effort and engaging every community with all the information.
Follow-up? Yep, follow-up.
Just, you know, this thing, Paul, as you know, we've been on the fence here for 5 years, and we all were shaking. People on both sides are shaking our heads. Why? How come we can't move forward? How come? And what happened during that 5 years? We were further ahead back in year one or two than we were at the end of five because of the distrust that developed because of there was never a definition of how many, how big, how long, you know, all those questions that led people to believe that, hey, just what do they want to do? How much is it going to impact our coastal communities? And we heard that loud and clear everywhere that we went. Every OPAC meeting that legislators went to, we continued to hear that. Why are we doing this? How is it going to impact us? And as Representative Schaffer said, we do try to represent the interests of our constituents. And they, I would say on the coast, overwhelmingly are still concerned about what this might mean. We need to do what 3534 said, because as soon as you get the economic analysis done and you really understand how it's going to affect the economies, that will maybe relieve some of this, you know, hype that's there now. If we believe in what we hear, you know, from that. And do you know when they're going to start on that part of it? I mean, you can't do that until you kind of get some site designations because you don't know what you're dealing with yet.
That's exactly right, and there will. The economic analysis doesn't happen until you have a preferred alternative. The preferred alternative doesn't happen until you actually nominate the sites, develop using some decision support tool like a Mark Sand decision support tool, something like that, to develop a range of alternatives. So the answer to your question is we can't get there until we actually have sites designated with a preferred alternative to be able to do a good economic analysis. From my side of it, it's in everyone's best interest. I mean, there is a good economic story here to be told from the patting on the backs that everyone got related to the shrimp. And that is a huge success story for the state of Oregon, which I believe a marine reserve network habitat protection component will be the same caliber of a pat on the back for our commercial fishing fleet and charter boat operators, being able to say that we are actually protecting habitat and the species associated to the habitat, some of which are 100 years old. And they can say it with a straight face, instead of saying, we don't know. We don't know 80% of the fish that we catch. Unknown status. To me, that's not Oregon. We know better. We know better from around the world that this tool will work, and it'll work in Oregon. But we need to make it happen. And so that's why I think this story about getting OPAC bottom up, struggle that it was, the document out in front of the public in its draft form, and let's listen to what the public say.
Madam Chair. Yeah, and maybe my friend Renee was going to say, I've still not heard how this bill gets in the way of everything you just said. I still have not heard that answer. So I'm sorry, and maybe it's my own ignorance, but I still don't see how we're getting in the way. Thank you.
Do we have time for one more question?
Yeah,
do you want to go right ahead.
Yeah.
Thank you. Because Paul's here, and wetlands are your thing as well. One of the pieces that we keep hearing, you know, there's a lot of focus on the salmon. We'd like to make the salmon healthier. And there's a whole variety of species in that kind. But one of the things that we hear about is that one of their challenges is that we have destroyed so much of the wetland and marshland area where there's that not very deep water that baby fishies can rest in before they go out and expose themselves to the predators of the sea. From your perspective, do we need to do to restore that? I mean, we got a lot of stuff built along the edges of waterways. Do we need to start tearing things down on shore?
Well, you know, I guess
I want to make this work for the whole for the population.
This is a really good discussion because folks who are in the Willamette Valley actually affect the productivity of our nearshore fishery. There's no question about it. So the investment that's happening in the Willamette Valley or in Yaquina Bay or Siletz Bay are an investment for the future. This is a legacy that we want to leave. We know better now. There was no plan 100 years ago when we attempted to do agriculture in those critical lowland habitats. That was not our plan. It was like, let's just figure out a way to survive. You know, that was no plan. There was no plan when we lost the sea otter. That was no plan. That was just, let's make a living. There was no plan to deal with oysters. Let's just make a living and ship them all to California. They did. They're gone. There was no plan to deal with Pacific Ocean perch. Scallops. Insufficient information. Unknown status. You just go through the list. In our estuaries, they've been modified anywhere from 60 to 90%. If you look close at that information, you go, I'm a charter boat guy, and I'm taking these folks out into the ocean to fish in our nearshore waters. And then you ask the question, how productive is our system? Well, it's been impaired 60 to 80%. Ballpark is 50 to 70% of the fish that you're going to catch are trying to make a living or trying to survive in an impaired watershed. So the investment that we make in our watersheds, like you're aware of, our projects in Alsea Bay, Yaquina Bay, which is protecting, restoring, engaging the community, it's a good investment in the long run. In the short run, it's a transition. There are individuals who are saying, tell me what to do. And then we need to be able to step up and say, here's an opportunity with a partnership. Federal funds, state funds, OWEB has really done a good job at figuring out how to engage the community. And there are significant steps that need to continue. So it's a good investment, and we need to make it happen.
Thank you. Other comments?
I've said it all.
Paul, thank you so much for coming.
I appreciate
you taking the time today.
Nice to see you. You look much better than
I'm
the
more
last,
upright.
The last
more
time
today.
We crossed paths.
I know.
Australia.
That was bad. That was the beginning. I'm not at the end yet. I'm next going to call Scott McMullen, our other traveler from afar.
Thank you.
Hi,
Chairman Groom.
And welcome.
Thank you. Scott McMullen. I'm from Astoria in Clatsop County. I'm a retired commercial fisherman, and I currently work as chairman of the Oregon Fishermen Submarine Cable Committee, a group that works with commercial fishermen on the Oregon coast and submarine cable owners and operators. I'm not going to take a position on the bill because of some other hats that I wear aside from my day job, but I would like to make some comments to the committee. I think it's very good that this bill requires an amendment to the Oregon Ocean Management Plan. It's good in that it would allow a comprehensive look, like all planning, it allows a comprehensive look to look at all things that are affecting the territorial sea. A big issue for our commercial fishing industry right now is the nexus between wave energy parks that are appearing to be right on the horizon and these marine reserves. The impact will be almost identical to the fishermen in that grounds that they have traditionally fished could be no longer available to them. So it just makes sense that in planning we look at both things. We don't look at them separately, but we look at them together. And I think that this amendment to the plan would allow for that. The other thing I'd like to say respectfully to the committee is that I think this is a good step to provide a go-slow approach. We don't know the impacts. There's a lot of talk about what reserves do in other areas. I think there's a lot of good evidence that in some areas marine reserves have done a lot of very good things. I know on our coast and the federal waters, there's an area called the Rockfish Conservation Area. It's not a true marine reserve. It's an area that prohibits trawling, but fish are just flourishing. They're thick in that area. Fishermen go nuts when they drive their boat over the top of it, and they see all this fish on their echo sounders, and they just they go nuts because they can't catch them. But clearly, when you stop harvest, fish are just thriving. In the territorial sea waters, as a former commercial fisherman, I'd have to say that stocks are quite healthy in most of the territorial sea. I can't say that I have knowledge of the entire coast. I fished on the north to central coast, but in that area we fished for sandsole, flounder, crab fishery, all very healthy in the territorial sea. I do think a go-slow approach is warranted, though, because while we don't know all the impacts, there could be some benefits, certainly, we don't know the economic impacts of these reserves. So that just suggests that we take a precautionary approach. We don't make radical changes without seeing what the effects are. The legislation suggests that we would only select sites that avoid economic impact, but that's simply a projection. I think the language is avoid an economic impact, but yet be large enough to have scientific validity. And we can project that a site won't have economic impact, but we don't really know what that impact is until after we're into it for a while. So I think that suggests that we need to go slow. Secondly, we need to go slow because we don't know the biological impacts. In a lot of cases, there's evidence that marine reserves increase biodiversity, increase the average size of fish, and I know that there's evidence of that. There is evidence that in some areas, a single species becomes dominant and actually decreases biodiversity. I served on the first OPAC and was chair of a marine reserves subcommittee for the first OPAC, where we heard testimony that at one particular reserve in Washington State, biodiversity went down. They had a single species that dominated and essentially drove the other fish away.
Didn't drive them away, it ate them.
Well, okay. Yeah, if they didn't get away, they got ate. I think you're correct. If there's one thing that's true about natural resources management is that you can get unintended consequences. We see that in management council decisions. They'll make a decision that everyone thinks is going to be just the perfect fit, and then as they get into it, they see, oh, we need to make a correction. I think it's very presumptuous to think that we know now enough to make decisions that are permanent and unable to be altered down the road. Many years ago in Washington, D.C., they implemented the Marine Mammal Protection Act. Very well-intentioned, and certainly there's been some good results of that. One of the unintended consequences is the proliferation of sea lions. And if, I don't need to tell this committee the impact of sea lions on the salmon and upon our coast. Third reason that I suggest that a go-slow approach is warranted is the cost. Certainly, as legislators, this is your baby to figure out how to fund. The implementation will be expensive. I don't think there's any way around it. If you do it right, there will be some cost. I heard unofficially from a marine biologist that probably to do an adequate baseline study, each site would require approximately $90,000 for a baseline study. I've heard that for monitoring, ongoing biological monitoring for a coastwide system, we're looking at probably in the order of about 3 biologists. And I've heard that for adequate enforcement, and this is not full-time enforcement, this is just enough enforcement to keep people honest, it would take 1 state trooper for each site. So I'm sure you as legislatures can kind of come up with the idea of what that might cost far better than I could, but I think it just begs us to be aware that this is going to have a price tag. So I'd like to thank you for your time and appreciate the chance to be before you.
Well, thanks for coming again, Scott. He's a familiar face to this committee. Rep. Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, and you're exactly, I mean, the decisions we made, as was alluded to early, clearly we made over the centuries horrible decisions. I mean, Johnson Creek watershed bisects my district, and 15 miles of that creek were tiled. Pavers were put in the creek. Now, one can obviously state truthfully that was a degradation of salmon habitat. And now, through the good work of OWEB and the Johns Creek Watershed Enhancement Board and all the hundreds, if not thousands, of volunteers that have poured their time and money into fixing the watershed. I saw a picture in their last magazine they sent, and there was a little steelhead on its way down the creek from Crystal Springs that runs right up to Reed College. And that, I believe, has happened because of the focus on this and going back and fixing. And I love the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. That's the kind of thing I think we need to do. And I think we're doing that in our forests and our fields. But we can only control so much in the earth. And one of the things you spoke about is making hard and fast decisions now out in an ocean. Now, we're talking a pretty big expanse of property here. I want to have some flexibility in there. I do not want, this is it, and this is, I do know this much, we put a bunch of electrical generating buoys out there where that essentially makes commercial fishing impossible. Mm-hmm. So when we are placing that, we should somehow overlap with this. I'm leaving an area of the ocean fallow, just like a farmer would on soil, and then maybe a couple decades switching it around may be the smartest thing to do. I don't know. But I don't want any hard and fast, hardcore decisions made that in the future we'll have to come back and fix. And I would eliminate, for a better of a kinder word, every single sea lion east of the Astoria Bridge. Period. That's how I would allow the fishermen. I would put a bounty on them. And that's exactly how I'd manage that resource. But I better be quiet now before I get in more trouble than I'm already in.
You need to stop him.
But I was going to comment that, and Scott knows this too, he probably hears them from his house, but the sea lions who have actually sunk the dock in Astoria because they're kind of heavy, but they've become a tourist attraction. Mm-hmm. I mean, people take mm-hmm. the trolley all the way up there to see them, and when you go into Safeway, you turn around and you think, what is that? And there's sea lion barking. They're just right out there. And they live there now. They've set up condos and everything right on the water.
Mm-hmm. We have a number of condos on our bayfront.
Yeah.
They are a tourist attraction.
Well, Scott, thank you very much for making the trip today. Greg Aldrich from DEQ. And welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Greg Aldrich, Government Relations Manager for the Department of Environmental Quality, and thank you for this opportunity to discuss the DESF 4 amendment of the original bill. And I understand there is a Dash 2 amendment that may eliminate this concern, but one of the things we notice is under on page 1, line 16, under permitted activities, there's monitoring and research, but there's no reference to emergency response. And, of course, we know there are oil spills and shipwrecks that occur along the coast, and we need to respond to them. So our proposal is just to insert the words emergency response that will allow any activities that's necessary, such as setting up oil booms, using oil dispersants, and other equipment to address emergency response activities. So it's a very simple fix if, in fact, the original language goes forward.
And I appreciate that very much because in addition to, and I like the rather broad approach because in addition to that, we may have a situation where some boat, some small boat may need to tuck in during a sudden storm, et cetera, and the tuck-in spot may be a marine reserve. And so this is really important that we do this, and it totally fits in with our intent. So I appreciate that very much.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions for Greg? Yeah, go ahead.
That's all okay. I have. It's just simple, okay. But we just wanted to make sure it was incorporated. Yeah. This is the language that goes forward.
Yeah, and we do have, is David here? He's not here yet. Well, we're going to be discussing the amendments too, but he's in 132. Do you want to call him and ask him to come in, please? Thanks. Really appreciate that. And I don't know, did we ever get an amendment?
Yeah, it's in the
Dash 4.
Dash 4.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and committee members.
Nan's going to come in by phone.
Right, whenever.
Let's Susanna Stoke. I hope I didn't mess up your name too badly.
Members of the committee.
Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Susanna Stoik. I work for the Port Orford Ocean Resource Team. I'm here today to represent our Fishermen's Board. We became aware of the bill on Thursday, and unfortunately all of us were in Santa Cruz at a conference, so we came together and made a consensus statement regarding the bill. So I'll just read that if that's okay.
Mm-hmm. And I apologize for not calling you sooner. I know you came from more than 100 miles away. I just got the card here, so
no worries.
Sorry.
I'll just go to the second line. We have concerns with this bill and would like to address the following. Port Orford has done a lot of work toward a community-developed nomination. It is not feasible for Port to endure a stalling or indefinite postponement of the process, as it would undermine the hard work being done to engage and inform our efforts locally. Those communities that have shifted their efforts in cooperation to the process would be penalized. The statement, small enough to avoid an economic or social impact on coastal communities, included but not limited to the significant loss of commercial fishing opportunities, is a premature and unrealistic statement. There will be economic impacts with this process, whether they are positive or negative. We expect the state to develop strategies that will mitigate the socioeconomic impacts, but to assume that they will be avoided completely is an impossible goal. There is ambiguity in the statement. The plan may not provide for more than 9 marine reserves and marine protected areas. This process has never acknowledged the potential for marine protected areas as a part of its nomination process, and MPAs should not be limited at this time through legislation. As a part of our stewardship area plan, Port intends to utilize this valuable tool of marine protected areas to complement our strategically placed marine reserve. To preemptively limit the use of this tool is to handicap our efforts. If the intention of this bill is to stop the process, we ask you to think about the communities in Oregon that have engaged and done the work at the community level. Port has utilized extensive resources of time and funding, engaging groups from our commercial fishing fleet all the way to our local garden club. These efforts would be wasted if support is lost at the state level. We, the Fishermen's Board of Port Orford Ocean Resource Team, do hereby agree with the previous statements. Sincerely, Chris Aiello, Danny Keeler, Lyle Keeler, Aaron Longton, and Jeff Miles. So that was their statement.
Thank you, Sam.
I do have a couple of comments just from me. The language of permanent, I think, is not such a bold statement if you incorporate that the overlying principle is adaptive management, and that was stated within the language of the definition of marine reserve, adaptive management being that once these areas are monitored and evaluated, if they're found to be ineffective or not meeting the goals, they can be altered, moved, or removed, and that was stated within the definition. To echo about the definition, it has been a shifting definition, and to come to a consensus agreement in OPEC is pretty strong. So to change that definition, and especially to change it, lowering the level of protection to allow extraction, it's changing it from a reserve to a marine protected area, which is a lower level of protection. I'm sure you're aware of that, but it shifts the mentality as we move this policy guidance document forward. So just a thought about that. Thank you very much for hearing my testimony.
Well, thank you for coming. That's a long way.
Yeah.
We were down there for the OPEC.
Madam Chair.
Rep. Holland, yeah.
Thank you. I guess I would just sort of like to put on the record that I too come from an area that's been working on a proposed site. The Depot Bay Nearshore Action Team has a site proposal out that they've been working through our communities and are getting positive input from our fishing community. So I just want to say on the record that it is not my intention to in any way negate the efforts that the Port Orford Group has been taking on, and I think that process has been going on, if I'm remembering my information correctly, for 7 years or so. So I, again, don't see anything in the bill that's intended to stop that process, and in fact, we, I believe, encourage the ongoing efforts. So it's possible that everyone hasn't had a chance to look at some of the amendments, and there have been some munching around with language, but I guess if there's a specific piece of language in the bill that you feel would do that, would undermine your effort, I'd be interested in knowing what it is.
May I respond?
Mm-hmm. That's a question.
So the statement, small enough to avoid, there's been a lot of discussion in OPEC as to avoid or minimize.
What's helpful to us is if you tell us what line number you're reading from,
here.
If you can.
I believe it was section 3A. Let me find it here.
It's line 13.
Line 13 on the
yep,
second
page.
Page
two, line 13.
Yep. Small enough to avoid an economic or social impact. So to avoid completely, the guys were discussing that if one commercial fisherman catches one less fish, that's an economic impact. So to better define that would be fine, but as it is, it's impossible to create a marine reserve that has no impact whatsoever. So that language was a little tricky for us to deal with.
Could I follow up on that? Because I think that is one of the sentences that we're kind of working on. And one of the proposals that's in this stack of amendments is to insert the word negative.
Mm-hmm.
I think with the thought process that there's no such thing as I mean, that there's some kind of impact to anything you do, but perhaps negative is trying to avoid significant negative impact. So I believe as I penciled in all of the amendments and tried to work with it, the current kind of proposals that are out in front of us would make it read small enough to avoid a negative economic or social impact on coastal communities, including but not limited to the loss of commercial or sport fishing opportunities. And a question I have for you is right now the bill reads, but not limited to significant loss of various fishing.
And I think the board would be
and we've talked about taking out the word significant, but maybe leaving it in deals better with the concern that I just heard from you. I mean, we all understand you can't do anything without some kind of impact. We're trying to sort of focus on not huge impacts.
And I think significant would be fine as long as it's defined what is significant. If a 20% loss of income on a coastal community is significant, then that should be, you know, what significant is defined as.
There's always that challenge.
And we took that language basically from the governor's comments on that, you know, and then when his chief of staff went up and down the coast, I think they discussed that too. And
yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have been weighing whether or not we want to put the word negative in, and you have to define it or significant. But I wanted to say, to take back to your group too, you are one of the pioneers in this process, and we would no way impede your progress because you've done so well. And I believe you've already come forth with a site that you all agree on.
We've got some sites in the works.
Okay.
Cool. Analyzing,
making
sure
biologically
significant.
Okay.
So, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming all that way.
No worries.
I know. Anybody? Oh, you have a question?
No, I don't. Just a comment for the whole committee. I've got to get back to the other committee.
No, I'm sorry.
But and I would have maybe liked to ask Scott McMullen, but it seems that over the last 2 or 3 months, the governor's staff haven't been emphasizing the purpose of marine reserves, just to set aside biodiversity for fisheries management. That seems to be becoming less of an issue, but there seems to be a growing desire of people to look at it for the purposes of marine research. They like that better. And I think you're going to get a lot more buy-in for marine research than you are just setting it aside permanently. I don't like that word either, because you might find out doing something permanent isn't what you wanted to do, and you've lost your ability to move that reserve to somewhere else and now disengage it and move it.
Mm-hmm. But would you like Scott to come forward? And
yeah, let him tell you, and then you can tell me what he said.
Okay. Nice to see you.
Excuse me.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I have heard repeated comments concerning research and the value of these sites for research. One of the benefits might be to evaluate present management in an area absent fishing as compared to an adjacent area with fishing. So there certainly is a lot of interest in that, and one of the things that the fishing industry has sort of said repeatedly is we want to make sure that if we do set these aside, there actually is some research going on. We don't want to set them aside for research and then just have them sit there. I think a number of people have pointed to a reserve near Depot Bay. Presently it's in a little cove near Depot Bay, and there has been some research there, but not a great deal. And fishermen point out to the Rockfish Conservation Area, a place that's been set aside to nearly all fishing now for quite some time, over 5 years, and no research is being done in that area as well. So the argument is, okay, if you're going to set them aside for research, show us that you have some money and you're actually going to do some research. So.
Okay. Rip
Schaffler. Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I couldn't agree more. I mean, there are those out there that just want to set places aside and say no human activity ever again. That is so completely, utterly unrealistic. I just can't get over it. We need to do something with these areas and find out what we're doing right or wrong, hopefully. Maybe not. I'm not sure. And then as far as the loss of the negative, potential negative economic impact, I think leaving the word significant in and leaving it undefined is better. You slap a 20% loss of a community's impact up to that, it's okay. If up to 5%, it's okay. I have a hard time believing people in those communities are going to say, oh, it's okay, give us a 5% hit in our economy. I just don't see people buying off on that, and I think rightfully so. So I'm not going to get hung up on this. I'm going to follow your lead on this, folks, but I wouldn't define significant. I would leave it purposely vague so that we had some flexibility and had some room to move in there. But if we don't research these areas, if we just set them aside for no reason, You know what? I think what you pointed out, the unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. What you have is a forest that gets thick with fuel, and then it burns down to no one's advantage, to no one's benefit. And we've been down that road before. So, for what it's worth. But, Madam Chair, I will follow you good folks' lead. That's my suggestion.
So that's also a point I made at one of the OPAC meetings was there could be a situation where you set aside a reserve, no extractive use, and then you end up with an invasive species that dominates, and you actually want to have fishermen come in and get rid of the invasive species, but you can't because the legislation will prevent. So we need to have enough flexibility to address whatever we find in the future.
But, Madam Chair, if I may, when you want to define the word varmint, I'll gladly provide the definition for that.
Okay.
He's good at that. Okay, now we're going to call. Thank you, Scott, very much. We're going to call Dave Hendricks up. He's our. Yes, so that he can. If he just let him know we're doing this, and then we're going to. He's going to go over the amendments. Sorry.
If I had a complete
set. Yeah, Wayne's been really torn between. I know it's hard for him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And Dave's going to go over these amendments. There's two new ones this morning. So
we have everything.
Yeah, you should take these if you need.
Chair Boone, members of the committee, Dave Hendricks from Legislative Council's office. The chair had asked me to briefly go over the amendments. Many of these have been replaced by subsequent ones, and so you can pretty much disregard them, I think, at this point. That includes dash 1, which has now been replaced by the dash 6.
Dash 6?
Mm-hmm. Yes. The dash 2 amendments is the definition of marine reserve, and most of the differences between these amendments relate to what you want to do with the definition of marine reserve. In this particular one is the one that was suggested by David Allen, who testified to the committee about this. And Commissioner Griffith had also indicated to me that that he liked these amendments as well in a telephone conversation I had with him on Friday. This definition would essentially kick the definition back to the plan itself, saying that, in essence, a marine reserve would mean what the Oregon Ocean Resources Management Plan said it was, and the only criteria for the definition is that the marine reserve would provide more comprehensive protections than a marine protected area, which I believe everybody understands to be the de minimis definition of what a marine reserve would be.
A question?
Oh, go ahead.
Thank you. I understand what you're saying, that this is kind of trying to match up with the Oregon Ocean Resource Management Plan terminology. From your perspective, would this definition preclude a recommendation coming from OPAC or whatever and being more restrictive than is in this definition? Once their recommendation is completed through this public process and then they come up with a recommendation that has that some areas should not allow extractive activity, that kind of thing. Would this preclude that from happening?
Chair Boone, Representative Cohen, no, it would not. In effect, this delegates to the council, actually LCDC, who is the one who actually adopts the plan, but would in essence delegate to them the authority to come up with what the definition is and the extent of the restrictions within a marine reserve.
Okay, I think that's important to note because of the perceptions out there that we're trying to stop the process, so this would still allow it to go forward.
This, in my opinion, is kind of a non-definition definition.
Okay.
Because it really doesn't tell you anything about what these things are going to be. It simply says that we're going to have something called marine reserves at some point, if assuming a recommendation comes forward from the council and runs through the process that would provide for reserves that would provide more protections and are provided under protected areas. The dash three amendments would simply put a limit on how long reserves and protected areas would remain in effect and essentially sunset them in 2018. Obviously, if some later legislature wanted to come along and amend that and extend that or eliminate it, they could, but at least at this point, these amendments would say that any amendments to the plan right now establishing marine reserves and protected areas would be time limited.
And we've had some comments on this one from a couple of sources questioning the doing this sunset without knowing the scientific input. So that's out there, too. Some people are concerned about that.
Yeah. Yeah, to follow up on that, I think what we're looking for is a way to get this concept that basically Rep. Krieger is an answer to the question you had posed in talking about the permanency, the argument that if you set them aside, we need to make sure that there's money for research and then allow flexibility to adapt them according to those findings, i.e. adaptive management. It's kind of not that we're trying to say they'll all go away at this date. It's like, how do we evaluate them and allow them to be changed if necessary? I don't know if you have any suggestions about that kind of language, but I think that's the goal of what we're looking for.
Chair Boone, Representative Cowan, you could have some language that specifically addressed continuing evaluation. I don't think that's in here in the law at this point, although it's implicit, I think, in the fact that you have a council that's directed to continually look at proposing amendments to the plan, and as part of that, indeed, would be able to, of course, to
make recommendations
for changes as, you know, time goes on and the actual effect and the benefit of the reserves or the protected areas are determined.
So again, this just still kind of leaves it up to OPAC then.
Yes.
Rep. Krieger, did you have something?
Well, just I know that earlier we got the little letter saying the governor wasn't happy with if, oh, Lord.
Here he comes again.
Okay, I'll be there. I'm ready. Okay. The governor might not be happy with something that limited the number of reserves. So if you change the time, then you could have more after that time, that type of thing.
Good to see you, Schaffler.
Yeah.
We'll grab you when we need it then.
Madam Chair, I definitely do not want to tie the hands of future legislatures. I mean, we have to take a look at these things. Just like my comment was just before Dave came up here, is we start locking stuff up into perpetuity and then we run into big problems. The whole point of this is to find out the benefit of these marine reserves and how they benefit this community, not to lock things up. That is something I support some kind of language in here, if not this language right here.
Okay, go ahead.
Chair Boone, the dash four amendments, I believe you just had testimony with respect to changes to the definition that currently exists in the bill. This would, of course, be an alternative to two, since if you adopt two, it completely replaces the definition that currently appears. And unfortunately, I didn't hear the testimony. I know, if you have questions on that, you'll have to give me some guidance on that. But in essence, the dash four would be if you decided to keep the definition, and this would be a small change to that definition of what a marine reserve is.
It basically, Greg Aldrich from DEQ stated that they wanted the opportunity to be able to get into the marine reserve for an oil spill, for example, and then we added in or a rescue attempt or something like that.
So this one is just dependent on dash two.
I'm not sure exactly which amendments you're going to plan to adopt, but if we go with dash two, then the language we're inserting dash four in is gone. Where are we putting it in the dash twos? What are we doing here?
Chair Boone, Representative Schaffler, if you adopt the dash two, as I said, it's basically booting the definition over to the plan.
Okay.
So this dash four would become moot.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
The dash five is another one that's been supplanted by dash six, so you can pass over that and move straight to dash six.
Okay.
The dash six amendments are essentially amendments that were proposed by Mr. Allen and Commissioner Griffith to the bill. And there are bits and pieces from both folks in here. Mr. Allen, in his telephone conversation with me on Friday, indicated that the really important one for him right now is the one that's on page 2, line 1, which would make it clear that there needed to be a recommendation for amendment to the plan to establish marine protected areas and marine reserves coming from the Ocean Policy Advisory Council. And so this is the one that he's looking at as being, and as he, at least as he described it to me, it was to ensure that it came through that process when the plan was amended. The other changes are small changes in the substance of the bill, and I can go through those. The one that you were just discussing that I should probably discuss is with respect to the impact, and you can see on line 10 of the proposed amendments, we did incorporate the negative economic impact as suggested by Representative Nelson at the hearing on Friday. However, the amendments do delete the word significant, and so I guess the question there is based on your previous discussion about the extent, if you want to describe the extent of the negative impact in when they look at how big a reserve or protected area should be.
Any comments on that? Can we still do conceptual? Can we change things? Or how does that work? I've heard both ways.
We strongly, strongly, unless, you know, it's just, you know, we have on occasion done them where it's something very clear and the drafter is there and they say, but it depends. I guess it depends.
Madam Chair.
Yes. I like the language in this amendment, and I don't want to, when we start working on it, I would be opposed to not accepting dash sixes because it inserts that pursuant to the recommendation from the Ocean Policy Advisory Committee, and I think that that begins to address some of the concerns that have been raised about this bill intending to stop the process. It in fact sort of codifies the process almost. But when you get down to the debate about these two words of negative and significant, I don't have an objection to putting in avoiding a negative impact, but I really think we need to leave the term significant in there because if you take it out, it's like any loss at all, and that really sort of does stop the process. But if you could say trying to avoid a significant negative impact.
That's what I was getting at.
So, and I think that's what you're getting at. I don't know whether that has the agreement of the drafters and all that kind of stuff, but to me, this amendment is fine except for the last line of it.
Madam Chair,
so I
can clarify, you would still be including a negative and then deleting significant, correct?
We're talking about leaving significant, and so it's significant.
So leaving significant in and putting in, inserting a negative.
So the line would then read, small enough to avoid a negative economic or social impact on coastal communities, including but not limited to the significant loss of commercial or sport fishing opportunities, is how the total ones would come out.
Chair Bruna, Representative Cohen, you might want to consider whether or not that significant should appear in front of negative impact, because otherwise you still have just negative impact with only the fishing, suddenly with a seemingly contradictory a significant impact on fishing. So if the intent is to prevent significant negative impacts, that would be the way I think you want to phrase it.
So you're sort of keeping the dash sixes. We're just kind of moving the word up.
Is that a consensus?
conceptual.
It's certainly a conceptual amendment.
It
could become an official.
Madam Chair, do we have time to get that done for
we
tomorrow?
We could do it tomorrow.
Okay. Yes. Usually it can be done before
David
tomorrow.
Has agreed to sleep here overnight.
I know. Madam Chair,
this is not the bill that will keep me here overnight.
Okay.
Other bills. There are other bills.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I don't want any conceptual amendments on this bill. That's just adding fire
to
what the problem is.
Now we know that we can. We have time to do it the other way. So, okay.
Finally, the Dash 7 amendments are also changes that were originally made by Commissioner Griffith with respect to the definition of marine reserves. So, again, if you go with the Dash 2, these would become moot simply because, you don't actually provide a definition if you go with the Dash 2s. And as I also mentioned when I spoke to Commissioner Griffith about these proposed amendments, he had indicated actually he was comfortable with the Dash 2s. So.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Any questions while our legal advisor is here? Rep. Krieger?
Having been in and out somewhat, it's hard to keep track. I was concerned about this thing about permanent. I was concerned about the, completely delete all extractions, because I think there's going to be some places that perhaps for a test area to monitor compared to, take areas compared to non-take areas that are very similar, you may want to have some extraction. So I want to make sure we don't get caught up in that.
Chair Boone, Representative Krieger, I spoke with Commissioner Griffith about this briefly. Actually, the bill right now doesn't call for permanent reserves anyway. One of the Dash 1 amendments has the deletion of the word permanent, but actually that was referring to the scientific committee that was going to be advising the council, and so it wasn't clear to me whether or not he really wanted to do that. When I spoke with him, he said, well, no, not actually, and so I have removed that. The one thing that does remain, I think, in the definition, I believe, of protected area, and I'm working from memory here since I haven't got the bill, was there is talk about lasting protection and whether or not that is a problem. But the Dash 6 amendments does remove that word.
So what I'm thinking here is, why don't we have one more person to submit? Thank you very much, David. We have one more person to submit testimony. We have 5 minutes left and we need to have a change made in our amendment. So why don't we wait until tomorrow to adopt any or all of these? That's fine. If that works for you guys too. Okay. So then we're gonna call Nan Evans on the phone. She can't be here in person, but this works so well, so we'll do it by phone.
Get all the commas in the right place.
Sure, everything's good. Yeah.
Always makes me jump.
Hello, we're calling for Nan Evans.
I'm sorry, I think you have the wrong number.
That's not good.
Thank you.
How did I do that?
Okay. That is her cell, which I...
The sevens we don't need.
But she said she was going to be on her cell. I must have done the wrong thing. Let me try again. I'm so good at that.
I had it in my office.
I got from Chip. They just have 1 to 2 available for me to check. Can you do that?
Okay. Can you do 1 to 2 with Chip?
Can you? Get together and meet with him?
Yeah, can you do 1 o'clock?
Yeah.
Between 1 and 2 sometime.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
The only
good,
time.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Good.
Hi, Nan. This is Debbie Boone. We're calling you from committee, so you're on the speakerphone. And we're ready to accept your testimony to House Bill 3609, if you're ready to go. And you have whatever time you need. We may lose a couple of people here in a second, but because we're getting close to the end, but please go forth and identify yourself for the record, please.
Certainly. Thank you very much. I guess I also need to know, do I need to turn down the mute on?
We can hear you just fine. You're fine, just whatever this is.
I just didn't want the computer where I've been listening to your interesting hearing game.
Okay. Good. You've been here with us then.
Thank you for the opportunity to do this by phone as well, since I just couldn't get to Salem this morning. My name is Nan Evans. I'm the Government Relations Director for the Nature Conservancy in Oregon. And in listening to the comments this morning, I would also reflect back on 20 years ago when I first had the honor of meeting now Representative Debbie Boone when we were working together on the Ocean Resources Management Task Force that eventually developed the Ocean Resources Management Plan. That's a shorthanded way of saying I've been in and out of this subject for a lot of years. From a Nature Conservancy standpoint, we are highly supportive of marine protected areas, including marine reserves, as one of the important tools for ocean conservation. And as mentioned earlier in the conversation, note that it is critical that those tools have to be designed with an adaptive management principle. With respect to the bill in front of you, we share some of the concerns that you've already heard, and so I won't repeat any of those. I will add an additional concern and then make a couple of other comments. One of the major concerns that we have is that given the complexity of this issue, it's certainly hard to do this in a special session. It's so fast. Because substantively, a concern is we know that there are a lot of existing constitutional, statutory, and regulatory authorities in the state agencies. And I'm sure you've all had the opportunity to look at an Attorney General's letter of advice to Louise Holliday, the Department of State Lands. The date on that is April 10th, 2007, which outlines existing authorities. And my fear is that the language of House Bill 3609 confuses the interaction between this process and existing authorities. And earlier this morning at Representative Boone's request, I sort of pounded out some draft amendment language that I sent to her by email, that amendment language would be to suggest changing Section 3 of the bill to say, can I just read this?
Yeah, please do.
A marine reserve or protected area may be established only by the State Land Board pursuant to its constitutional common law and statutory authority in coordination with other agencies, both state and federal, that have regulatory authority in Oregon's territorial sea. A marine reserve... and with recommendations from the Oregon Ocean Policy Advisory Council. A marine reserve or marine protected area must be in compliance with statewide land use planning goal 19, and the Land Conservation Development Commission shall amend the Ocean Resources Management Plan and Territorial Sea Plan to include any marine protected areas or marine reserves. Then I would step one under a new section 3 or an amended section 3. On sub 2, I would suggest language that would say, in establishing marine reserve or marine protected area, the Department of State Lands must provide a plan and procedures for monitoring the marine reserve or marine protected area and specify the manner in which requirements and prohibitions relating to the marine reserve or marine protected area enforced. B, based on the best scientific information available, and be developed using advice, and guidance, if available, of the Permanent Scientific and Technical Advisory Committee established pursuant to ORS 296.451. C, under sub 2, provide for adaptive management to ensure that the objectives for which the Marine Protected Area or Marine Reserve was established and to adapt to changing future conditions. D, be developed with input from coastal local governments and the residents of coastal communities, as well as Oregonians statewide. And E, be established only after compliance by the adopting state agencies with all relevant requirements for public hearings. And then I would also suggest a couple of additional changes. I am struck by what I consider the positive fact that the definition in House Bill 3609 of marine protected areas conforms very nicely with the federal definition in the presidential executive order on this subject. And perhaps for clarification, you might improve that definition of marine protected area, that's section 1 sub 3, by adding something along the lines of marine protected areas may include marine gardens, marine parks, marine refuges, marine sanctuaries, and marine reserves. The objective served by creating marine protected areas may include conserving marine resources or habitat, maintaining biological diversity, protecting threatened or endangered species, preserving submerged archaeological resources, or other scientific, educational, or recreational purposes, including research. A couple of other quick comments. I would suggest that the bill not include any limitations on either the number of marine protected areas or the size. And that's based on a fundamental principle from the Nature Conservancy that we need sound science to guide those decisions, and that at this point in this bill, the use of those kinds of numbers on either the number of areas or the size would be quite arbitrary. Another comment I would make is that it does not make sense to us to put a sunset date on marine protected areas. It certainly does make sense to add provisions for monitoring, evaluating, and reporting the performance. I guess as a citizen, I would hope if the state is investing resources, personnel resources, and research resources in something like a marine protected area, that those resources would be well invested and the area would remain in existence until after some evaluation, one would prove that it should be either changed or removed. It makes no sense to me from an investment standpoint to put a sunset date on the marine reserve. It also makes no sense to us from a biological standpoint, given the very, very, very long lifespans of some of the marine organisms. We hear wonderful stories of highly productive and highly fertile brown fish who are 100 years old. With those comments, I would suggest that if you choose to go forward, you might reduce some of the both confusion and fear by adapting some of the suggestions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nan, and I wanted to let you know that some of the, and everybody's going to get a copy of these, but some of your concerns have already been incorporated into proposed amendments. So
okay.
Some of it's in.
I haven't seen all
I know, and I'll try to get that to you. I'll go through these a little later today and get that to you.
I can send it to her.
Okay, Sue Marshall, our administrator, will do that. So.
Okay, thank you.
Any questions for Madam Chairman? Go ahead.
Just a comment, and I know that I haven't got the full text in front of me, so just a few notes and thoughts I had as I was listening. No, I don't need them right this second, but I can't read and talk very well. But I don't think that the full breadth of the comments we just heard are included in the proposed amendments before us. And I really do think that, you know, we kind of got grudging approval for a small adjustment to the amendments that were out there, but to do anything this comprehensive in the next 24 hours would probably be impossible. And it also raises some concerns with me that it would then generate an additional level of conversation that would need to go on about those amendment proposals. So I guess I'm just offering the comment that I think it's probably too late in the process, but if we fall back on focusing on the continued role of the Ocean Policy Advisory Committee, it sort of continues into a lot of the rest of these concerns where they can probably be addressed in a more appropriate setting than here.
Okay. So thank
just,
you.
I wanted to share those comments on the record at this point so that Nan would have a chance to hear them as well.
Rep. Krieger.
Madam Chair, one of the biggest things that we did was to make sure that no recommendation went to the Division of State Lands or LCDC or any place else. The recommendations go to the Department of Fish and Wildlife about the creating, which would be a step backwards that no coastal legislator could possibly go along with if you really take a look at what that might mean. The original law said that any OPAC recommendation that went to LCDC, for instance, had to be adopted by all the other state agencies if they approved it. So that had Parks, Department of Fish and Wildlife, Division of State Lands, all out of the picture. Now, why would you take an agency out of the picture, Department of Fish and Wildlife, that is designated as the main agency to regulate our fish and wildlife resources? So no way am I going to go near any of this, especially this late in the process. Any suggestions that might have some validity, if they're concerned about a November deadline, you'd be looking at November of 2010 or 12 before you ever got this all incorporated and took that out to the public. You'd never get there.
Chair Boone, may I respond?
Yeah, please.
I just want to clarify here that we all know that OPAC is an advisory committee, and there are requirements in both Constitution and statute for the Land Board, the Fish and Wildlife Commission, LCDC, and a number of, frankly, other state agencies who are involved. And my suggested amendments, although perhaps large, are meant to clarify both the role of the OPAC and the other agencies, because OPAC is only advisory. And I realize it is late in the process. Also, my sort of original comment about it's a bit frustrating to do something of this magnitude in the special session with the kinds of difficult time frames you all are working under.
Thank you. Are there any other comments for Nan? Thank you, Nan, very much for being a part of our committee today.
Thank you very much.
And I'm glad you were able to keep up on the Internet. Thank goodness for technology.
Indeed.
Okay, thanks again. All right, bye-bye.
If OPAC made a recommendation,
and
to LCDC,
go ahead and
I get what you're saying.
And if they approved it,
we're done.
All their agencies had to adopt everything. Their plans
okay.
to that.
It needs to be
I mean, we didn't have a biologist.
Understood. Okay. Is there any further business? We stand adjourned.